This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Place to Be Nation Wrestling Network, welcome to episode number 17 of NWA Crack and Roll. I am your host, Sean Kidd, and we are on part three of our Before They Were Crockett Watch as we're trying to get our journey through the summer, hopefully to get to December 85 in September. But before we begin and I introduce our guest tonight, I would like to introduce my co-host. First, Dr. G, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing great, doing great. Although I wish the weather was nicer over the weekend here in the on the East Coast, but other than that, it's nice. It's the unofficial start of summer, which is my favorite time of the year. So we'll see where that goes. But I'm also looking forward to getting back to our regular watch though in 1985. But this is a good holdover to get us. There's some good stuff. There's some good stuff and there's some real horrible stuff that we've seen so far. But I try to think of the good stuff rather than the bad stuff.
Well, unfortunately, I think that trend of bad stuff will continue tonight. We should have some good stuff as well. Yeah. But I'm with you. I'm looking forward to getting back to December 85. I think we have some really special episodes coming up. We have this four-part series, and then we have two two-part series that'll bridge us over the next couple months. And then in September, we'll get right back to December 85. But I've been enjoying watching these matches and going back and watching some matches that I didn't know exist and matches that I've actually liked and matches I really haven't liked, but it's been a fun little excursion. So I'm looking forward to talking tonight.
It is, definitely. I think the thing is that it's nice to see the evolution of the, I hate to use the word character, but I guess we kind of use that a lot now in wrestling, but just seeing how they, where they were and where they've become now that we're watching them in 1985, it's definitely interesting to see. And especially, with a guy like Arn Anderson, who we, love to death and seen, some of his stuff before he reached the 1985 time frame.
Yeah, I like it. It helps give perspective on them before they were Crockett, because we just jumped right into Crockett and a lot of the stuff I haven't seen. So I know for me, it's been really cool to go back and watch some of the stuff to see where they were and where they are now. And Arn Anderson's a great example of that. So up next, Colin McDougal. Colin, how are you tonight? Or I should say Colin Koloff. I always screw that up.
It's okay, Sean. I'll keep the family away from you. Just this one more time, though. I think the closer we get to almost being a year, I think it's becoming a bit more egregious. No, I'm good, thank you. Yes, interesting selection of matches for tonight. You saying that there's some good stuff in it. I got to about three quarters of the way through thinking that might have been a bit of a lie, but no, it did produce some gems there eventually. But so I'm looking forward to hearing everyone's comments on it. Particularly one person who I think we're all looking forward to hearing from.
Yeah, so tonight, our two parts of this series, we had Scott Shiflett on. So for the second set, part three and four, I have invited my co-host over on Highway to the Impact Zone and my most recent co-host on whatever damn pod that we're doing on the current Impact. I don't think we really know what it is, but we've done two episodes, and I'm welcoming Matt Souza. Matt, how are you tonight?
Gentlemen, always a pleasure to be on with you. Yes, that the untitled current day Impact Wrestling Pod. Please listen to those if you have not over on North South Connection. Sean, you mentioned that there is good, and there is good here, but you mentioned the bad, and boy, is the bad bad. But we'll get to that later on.
Yes, we will. But before we jump into this, so Matt, thank you for joining us. I think this, Matt, this is like your second or third appearance. I'm not really sure. But we all love having you on, and always stirs some good debate. The first two matches tonight I look forward to because I call them the Souza specials, but we'll get to those in a minute. But first up, unfortunately, like a lot of the pods that we've done on this show, as we approached a year, we're only, what, 2 months away from our year anniversary at this point, or 1 month away by the time this drops. We've had a lot of people pass away. So we've had Butch Reed pass away, Road Warrior Animals passed away. I can't remember who else, but unfortunately, we had another death literally, I think it was the night of or the day after we recorded our last episode, and that's one Don Kernodle. And we haven't seen a lot of Don Kernodle on this podcast. The one I will go back to, there's two. We did see Don Kernodle at ringside at Starrcade when we did Starrcade 85 because his brother was in that tag team match with Ole Anderson against the Russians. But the one match that I absolutely remember on this was back when we watched May of 85. His match against Tully Blanchard was probably one of my favorites that we've watched on this show so far. It was just took me aback, was fantastic, but he had plenty of history prior to 85, so I'm just going to kind of go around the horn, and Dr. G, as someone that's been a steward of watching Crockett Wrestling and very familiar with older style NWA, what are your thoughts on the passing of Don Kernodle?
Well, you know, Don Kernodle definitely has a history in Crockett Wrestling, and, you know, I do remember him with his tag team with Sergeant Slaughter. I believe they were NWA World Tag Team Champions, so that's mainly my point of remembrance. And that match with Tully Blanchard, you know, I remember saying that, wow, you surprised me with that. I didn't expect that one. He's a good hand, always been a good hand. Never, I would say he's just been a pretty much a good mid-card wrestler, a good, you know, territory guy, and, you know, had a lot of respect in the business. I mean, I don't hear too many negative things about Don Kernodle. So, you know, rest in peace, Don, and you know, the prayers to his family. And you know, it's wow, Sean, it's crazy just doing the show. Like you said, the deaths that have happened since we've started the show, and the weird thing is that we're actually covering these guys now. So it's definitely strange, but you know, it's nice that we'll be able to remember their careers.
Yeah, and we'll actually have a match. I tried to track down some Don Kernodle matches, and most of them were in the Mid-Atlantic territory that I found, but I found one from Canada. It's kind of split up a little bit, but we'll talk. So we did add a special match for Kernodle just to kind of take a look at what he was doing before Crockett, so we'll see that tonight. Colm, what are your thoughts on Don Kernodle and the passing of Don Kernodle?
Yeah, it's another sad moment for us. I think you're right. I think it either broke as we were recording, or the day after. It's an issue that comes with the territory of covering stuff that's 35 years old. I don't have many memories of Don Kernodle past the Tully match, and then his legendary match, the final conflict cage match with Slaughter. It did feature quite highly in the GWCW list that we compiled last year. But yeah, another very sad moment for us, and yeah, his thoughts go out to his family.
Yeah. And Matt, anything you would like to add to that on Kernodle?
Yeah, not much more to add, except May 85, that was the show. That was the first time I think I was on Crock and Roll. So we've all obviously watched that Tully match, and that Tully match was tremendous. So definitely seek that out if you're looking for a really good Don Kernodle match to remember him by. But yeah, like Callum said, you know, as you cover more stuff in the 80s, like, I mean, the sad fact is you're going to see more and more of this. It sucks, but yeah, sad. It's sad to see.
Yeah, so, I mean, really strong hand in the Mid-Atlantic. He did have a WWF run, although it was mostly in the jobber role, I would say. But I think he was like a 3 or 4-time tag team champion. I know he's a champion with Slaughter. He was a champion with Ivan Koloff as well. So rest in peace, Don Kernodle. And like I said, we'll talk about a match of his later on in the show tonight. So with that, we are going to jump into part 3 of our watch. So our first match tonight, before we get into it, we're ranking these matches as we go, and so far we've watched 14 matches in this series in the first two parts. And so far, the two best matches that we have ranked are from episode one. Actually, the best three matches that we've ranked so far have been from episode one, It was Flair versus Brett Sawyer, which took us all aback. It was shocking. The Rock and Roll Express versus Midnight versus Ted DiBiase and Dr. Death. And then the dynamic duo of Gino Hernandez and Tully Blanchard versus Tito Santana and Mills Mascaris would be our third. Was like a 2.75. So those are our top three so far. So let's see if anything on here tonight can compete with those three. So we're going to go right into our first match. And as I said, the first two matches I called the Sousa specials because Sousa is a big fan, as he's been on our show in the past, a big fan of both of these gentlemen that we're going to talk to about in the first two matches. So our first match, we are going back to 1972. It is Championship Wrestling from Florida, and it is the Briscoes taking on Paul Jones and Dory Funk Sr. And there's a lot of Paul Jones out there on YouTube land, guys. And as with every episode, all these matches are on YouTube. And Colm, I would like to say thank you because I know you've been adding these matches to a watch list to follow along with the pod. So that was really cool of you to do. So thank you for doing that. But the thing is with Paul Jones, it's really hard to find anything really non-Mid-Atlantic. And even Championship Wrestling from Florida is still NWA affiliated. But we're going back to 1972. And this is so old. It is on that old projector film reel video that's what we're watching. The match has clearly been cut. But we did get 7 minutes of it, so we'll open it up. We got Soli on commentary, who sounds like he just woke up from a bender or just started a bender. I'm not sure which, but he was in really bad shape. I thought it was a pretty good intense start between Jones and Jack Briscoe. They were trading moves, and I thought it looked pretty stiff. The other note I made in this, it was a very strong hair game in this match because all the gentlemen in this match had really, really wild, bushy hair. I thought there was a weird camera angle in this, makes them look like midget wrestlers, and it was just weird. And the story in this match was really all Briscoe and Jones for the first part of it. Dory and Jerry finally fight for a few seconds. Match was clearly cut, lots of punches, etc., but I thought the punches were stiff. In the end, Jerry pins Dory with an abdominal stretch into a pin. I liked what I saw, but I also think I would have liked to see the whole thing because I bet the match in general was probably pretty darn good based on what we saw. There's definitely better Paul Jones stuff from Mid-Atlantic, but again, it was really hard to find stuff that wasn't well-known or things that weren't already on the Mid-Atlantic TV show. It was 7 minutes, so before I give my ranking, I'm going to go to our guest first, Matt Sousa. What did you think of this tag team match?
Well, first of all, you mentioned Gordon Soley. Good Lord, was he rough. Oh, my God. And I love how you could literally hear the tape machine rolling in the background during this clip. Like, they didn't even attempt to kind of edit it out. But, oh, God, Soley was just boring me to tears. And I know he's well-regarded and everything. And I know, you know, the big thing with him is, oh, he makes it sound like a real sport. But real sports commentators have a pulse that Soli doesn't have. Like, oh, it's just...
You know what, Matt? It's funny because the thing that you said about Soli, we've had Soli a few times on this podcast as a commentator. And I'm like you. I find him very drab and boring. I don't think I've seen the great that people say. Yes.
People like him, that's fine, but he's just super not for me. I really like the forearm smashes that Briscoe and Paul Jones were throwing to each other. I thought the footage, considering it was from 1972, didn't look half bad. I mean, I know it was like 8mm film, but you know, some of the other matches we're going to talk about, the footage was pretty rough to say the least. So I thought this was pretty good and pretty neat to see prime Briscoes and Dory Funk Sr., which you don't get a lot of. It's tough to rate stuff like this because, I mean, you got to imagine this match probably went in real time like 20 minutes or so and we only get 7. But it's definitely worth a watch. So I went 2.5 for the whole thing. But, again, I'm not comfortable with that rating because we only saw 7 minutes of what was probably a 20-minute match. But it's definitely worth seeking out.
Yeah, I went 2.25 based on what we got. I bet the whole 20 minutes of this match was probably pretty damn good. I would have loved to see the whole match, but... Yeah, I don't disagree with you. It's hard to rate, but I'm not that far off from where you're at. Dr. G, what did you think?
Sean, I'm right with you. I went 2.25 on this. You know, it was nice to see some Briscoes. You know, this is, you know, as a tag team, this is kind of in their prime period. Dory Funk Sr., I have to say, that might have been the first match I've ever seen.
I've never seen a Dory Funk Sr. match, so that immediately appealed to me as well.
Probably would have thought it was Dory Funk Jr. if you didn't tell me, but You know, it's funny. Now, guys, I, you know, going back to what Matt was saying, I grew up with Gordon Sully, and I, you know, it's funny because we're not seeing his best in the stuff that I have seen. He is an acquired taste. I'm not going to lie to you. I grew up, that's what I grew up listening to. So I guess you kind of have a little soft spot in your heart. But now that I'm going back on some stuff, I'm like, yeah, he was definitely a little rough. And then he's trying to do a, you know, obviously he's watching that match after it happened. And obviously when you're not there, there's definitely, you know, some people are really good at it. Some people aren't. And he obviously wasn't. He just wasn't feeling it, it seemed like. And hearing the projector in the background was hysterical. Kind of reminded me being back in school.
It's like I envision him sitting in his like little bar area with it up on the wall while he's like taking shots of gin. That's kind of how I imagine.
To me, he sounded like he just woke up from the bender rather than you know, in the middle of it. But in regards to the match, you know, just a good tag team match. I enjoyed the match, and I agree with Matt. The footage for that time, even though it was on 8mm, wasn't that bad. The angle was weird. It seemed like they did, because there are a bunch of this stuff on, you know, these old matches from Championship Wrestling from Florida. It seemed like that's how they recorded it back then. You know, remember, they probably just had one camera that they used, and that was about
it. Well, what
it.
They did on that show is they always did an old match segment, and it was usually in this form or fashion where they cut it down and it's 8mm.
Yeah, it's somebody that was with their camera that they, you know, probably a kid that worked in the office or something.
Yeah.
You know, the two and a quarter, I enjoyed it. It was neat, I guess, to see some of these guys back in their prime, and then going back to 1972. We haven't watched too many really, really old matches. This is probably one of the oldest matches that we've watched. So
it is the oldest match we've watched. 39 years old, definitely the oldest.
So I enjoyed it. I think if anybody wants to go seek it out, I think they would enjoy it. But you're right, and we'll say this throughout the whole night. We realize the announcing does make the match. And now we realize, even when you hear a young Vince McMahon, you realize, wow, he definitely wanted to change things when he became owner of the company. And he definitely, you know, for the good or the bad, and we could say some bad about Vince McMahon, but he definitely made, you know, announcing much more interesting in the 80s compared to what we're watching right now.
Yeah. And I stand corrected because this match is older than me. So this match is 49 years old. For the record, so wow,
you're right. I didn't do my math well either. I should have said.
Well, I guess I should have realized.
I guess I wanted to be 39 again.
Well, I guess I could have said it was a year before I was born and would have done the simple math. So yeah, this match is old as shit, and we'll leave it at that. Colm, what did you think of this match?
Well, if it was from the year before you were born, well done for finding footage from the prehistoric era, Sean. Well done.
You know, I was trying to be nice. I didn't want to do
it. Careful. That's a Dr. G jab underrated there, too, by the way. Just for the record.
Hey. I was trying to be nice and not make an old joke, but Colm is right there. God bless.
All right. It's okay. Colm broke the seal. It's all good.
Start as you mean to go on and all that. I didn't think it was all that bad. I did think it was good to see a match. Three of the best ever, and Paul Jones. And I did
is
also Dory make
Funk Sr. really one of the best ever? Because I don't think any of us have seen a match with him ever.
Well, I wrote that when I thought it was Dory Funk Jr., to be fair.
I also thought it was Dory Funk Jr. before
I
watched
it. Right? Okay, all right. So, I'm not losing my mind then. Okay.
We will see Dory Funk Jr. on our next episode, by the way. We will see him there. But go ahead, McDonald.
This is going to sound very, very, very stupid, obviously, but there's no disputing who Dory Funk Junior or Terry's father is, because he's the spitting image of both of them. He's like a hybrid of both of them. So that probably does make him the best ever if you're a hybrid of Terry and Dory Junior. I was watching it, and obviously there wasn't a lot of context to it given in the commentary, and the match was clipped, as Matt said. But I take it the story was that Jones didn't want to face Jerry Briscoe, so he was keeping him out of the ring, and any time he was tagged in, he would tag out to Dory Senior. I thought that was quite good. It's strange to rank given given that we've lost about 10-15 minutes of the match. But I didn't think what was there was solid enough, so I went 2.5 as well.
Okay, so pretty solid opening, and I want the record to show, Matt Souza, that you rated a Paul Jones match higher than me. Just let the record show that.
I'm nothing if I am not right down the middle.
You are definitely fair, so I appreciate that, knowing how much you aren't a big Paul Jones fan, so that's really great. All right, so our next, so not a bad opening. I would have liked to see more, but yeah, I went 2.25. So we'll move on to match number 2, which I don't think we'll have the same love for this one as we did the first one. So the number 2, Matt Souza's number 2 favorite wrestler is Jimmy Valiant. And Matt, you were on the episode where you had to watch that match. Was it the Kamala match that you had to watch?
Oh, I sure was.
Yeah, so we went to Puerto Rico, so Matt was on for that. And very well known, Matt's a big Jimmy Valiant fan. So I was like, okay, let me find a Jimmy Valiant match, because I needed one for this show anyway, for this series. So I was searching YouTube, and I came across Jimmy Valiant versus Jay Strongbow from June 16th, 1975, Madison Square Garden. All right, so Jimmy Valiant, I think, comes out. He looks very different. He's handsome Jimmy Valiant here in his first class male jacket. Handsome Jimmy Valiant. Strongbow, very Wahoo-like. So right away, you got the Jimmy Valiant and Wahoo hatred. It's probably going to come into play here, I would imagine, at least between two people on this pod. But he had some really ugly tights on. The ref, I like the older matches where the ref dressed like my dad going on a 70s drive, because they wear some really freaking crazy clothes and just look old. Typical Valiant, lots of choking, including with his jacket, and terrible kicks. The other note I made is it mandatory for every Indian gimmick to run in place and, you know, do the Indian dance, because it happens in every gimmick. And Jay Strongbow does it here just very, very badly. The best thing that Valiant did in this match was sell a sleeper. There's a submission spot pulling Strongbow's arms back, which was extremely boring and on brand and felt like forever. And then there was a nerve hold on top of it. Strongbow wins with a Thez press, that really bad-looking Thez press, that Vince says, look at that maneuver, which is classic Vince, right? So this match was 15 and a half minutes that I'll never get back of my life, and 15 minutes and 49 seconds for too long. I am going to go to Dr. G first.
The match was brutal. I mean, what you know, Jimmy Valiant, I like this incarnation of him better, but that doesn't mean I like him. Just let me make that clear.
Sure you're clear, because Matt will rip you apart.
I like the heel. I like the heel version better, and not this, you know, goofball that's running around the ring, you know, the way he does in Crockett. I can't take it. So I just thought it was a better heel, but wow, these guys are just brutal. And Chief J. Strongbow, I never understood what they liked about him. It's an Italian guy being an Indian, which, you know, obviously does not mix too well. Doesn't really get over too well today, but I don't know. I just I can't even – I have to give it a dud. I'm sorry. I can't even give it half a star. It's just – it was awful. There was nothing good about it at all. Even the announcing wasn't good. You know, Vince at that time, it just, that was the New York territory, though. They just loved those 15-20 minute matches at the beginning of the card. It was just like, you know, do these rest holds and just brutal.
Yeah, I put, here's the thing I wrote. I put typical boring Valiant, even in 1975. I don't get it. Like 10 years, we went 10 years in the past and he's still boring as shit, even in 1975.
He's a boring wrestler, but I mean, his character with him being a heel, the Valiants actually had a pretty good run, but I just can't take him in Crockett. I just don't understand it. You know, I didn't understand why he was so over. You know, I can understand people hating him as a heel, but why they loved him when he was a face, I have no idea.
There are people that listen to this podcast that, you know, I have high respect for in terms of how they view matches, and they're a fan of Jimmy Valiant, and I just can't wrap my head around it. And I'm talking to you, Chad Campbell. All right, Kyle.
No,
oh yes. Yeah. Oh yeah, he's a boogie woogie guy. I think he likes his boogie woogie. So anyway, Colum, what did you think of this disaster?
I've got half a page of notes, and they're not all None of them are complimentary. Oh no, one of them is complimentary. First one, Crowd is Red Hot, which again is a, is another. Like, it's just one of these. It's like one of these questions you don't have the answer to. Like, what is the meaning of life? Why is the crowd always so rabid when Jimmy Valiant walks out? I don't understand that. I've got a note here. When you can't do a shoulder block properly, you're not exactly going to see Flair Steamboat or Austin Britt. Jimmy Valiant did look in strangely good shape compared to what we normally see him. But I've got Bell's just wrong. Can all degrade this utter shite. This is awful. What the fuck's happening? That was utter shite, dud. I'll keep the other comments. This was an abomination. But I will keep.
I like the way you put it.
Thank you. But I'm not going to.
I like the way the abomination bit. Sounds in your accent. I like that a lot.
Abomination.
Abomination.
Yeah, I love it. We need to make a shirt for Tee Public.
Yeah, you need a
abomination.
Shirt. Abomination. Go ahead.
Oh, that was like, yeah. Well, we're almost sounding like thingy here. We're almost sounding like Conrad here. but yeah, I'll. That's all I can articulate. But I'm sure one of us. If I haven't made it clear enough already, yes, again, dud. But yeah, I will defer the rest of my comments so I can hear what Matt's got.
Yeah, before we go to our guest, Colin, worst match we've watched in the history of this pod so far?
Oh, absolutely. This is at least the Kamala match was short. That's a positive for it. This one was, as you say, 15 and a half minutes.
What was it? You have to say it one more time.
It was an abomination.
All right, Matt, you're up.
You know, Sean, I don't mind you picking a match out of spite against me, but to bring your co-hosts down is really a shame and very disgusting.
Okay, so let me be clear. We had to find a Valiant match for this podcast, so there was no way around it. No matter what I picked, it was going to be shit because it's Jimmy Valiant.
I mean, you didn't have to. You
yeah, I
just,
did. I felt like I had
you
to.
You couldn't find a Valiant
no,
match.
No one was forcing you.
Well, why would I want to find a Valiant match? It might be
because at least he's in it, and maybe the other one's better. Well, I don't know.
One Valiant is enough. I don't want to see two of them. But anyway. So I'm going to go ahead and read. I don't have half a page of notes. I have about a paragraph of notes. But I'm going to go ahead and read them verbatim, if I may.
Go ahead.
Oh, for fuck's sake. First line. First thing I say. Valiant hasn't aged a day because he looked 80 years old in 1975, just like he does now. The referee here looks like a cross between Paul Bearer and Hitler. Let's see. This is dreadful. Nothing is happening right now. Why does the crowd like this? Now we have a rest hold that lasts exactly 38 minutes. I hate this and want to die. Strongbow just isn't going to sell anything, is he? Strongbow with a sleeper hold. What a maneuver. Please end this. Strongbow comically takes a big boot and crumples to the mat. Oh my God. Strongbow mercifully ends this with a Luthez press. Time of the fall, 38 hours, 17 minutes, 41 seconds. This is one of the worst matches I have ever watched, minus 100 stars.
Wow, minus 100 stars. All right, so I would tend to agree with Matt. This is probably one of the worst matches I have ever watched, not just in this pod, but the history of wrestling. Do not go out of your way to watch this match unless you really want to see what truly truly horrible wrestling is and really how truly awful Valiant is. And I continue, like many of you on this show, wondering why Jimmy Valiant is so over, not only in 1975, but also 1985. And the answer continues to be unanswered. So with that, we will move out of that piece of shit and we'll see how we fare in the next one. So our next match, oh, by the way, I also win a dud as well. So I could go on minus 100 stars, but it's just pure shit. Our next match. So when we started this podcast, we had a Mid-Atlantic champion by the name of Buzz Tyler, and we never ever really saw him in any matches except for when we got to Bash 85 when he was in that six-man match. And then he just up and disappeared and vacated the title. So I went back and I found a match with Buzz Tyler taking on Jerry the Crusher Blackwell, who many might know from his AWA days. He was pretty famous in AWA. This is from Central States, 1984. So both guys are big dudes. Terry Garvin, who most would probably know, I assume it's the same Terry Garvin from the WWF fame. That was part of that whole big sexual harassment deal in the mid-80s, is on commentary with some glove. And then I guess some guy, some guy comes and smacks him with a glove, and Terry blabs about putting on the tights to get over this guy. Some guy named PG Stone, just some terrible commentary, and I had no context of what the hell was going on. Jerry's spots in the corner, and Rammy Buzz, I thought, looked okay. I thought Buzz had some stiff punches and forearms. Blackwell falling off the top rope to the mat, I laughed very hard at that. They fight outside to a double DQ, and I put another shit match. I'm glad to have Sousa on for this episode. I guess we didn't miss much with Buzz Tyler. I went a dud, and it's so bad. So, Callum, I will go to you first.
I always heard that Central States Wrestling went down because it was boring. I can't think why. I can. This match was on and nothing happened in it. Nothing. I can't think of one solitary spot, one move that was memorable. Nothing happened. I can also see why. I mean, that might be something to do with Central States. That might be something to do with the guys, well, Central States and the guys they have in the ring. It also might just be completely down to Buzz Tyler. And that's maybe the reason why we didn't see him in Mid-Atlantic too much. But yeah, I've not really got a lot to say about it. Because it was, nothing happened. It wasn't outrageously bad. It wasn't an abomination. But it was just, it was there and nothing more really. I will give it a good, I'm not even get a rating written down for it. I'll give it a star just for the guys were there and they tried. Yeah, nothing much happened in it.
So one star because they tried.
One star because they tried, and it wasn't outrageously bad. I'm not saying that Jimmy Valiant and Strongbow didn't try. I mean, they probably did. But they created something. When they tried, they created something that was actively bad. This wasn't actively bad. It just wasn't good.
Okay. Matt, what'd you think?
Yeah, I'm kind of in the same boat as Callum, honestly. It just, nothing happened. and apparently, I don't know if you guys caught this, but apparently when we're joined in progress, like 10 minutes had gone by in the match. So apparently this match is like 14 or 15 minutes long.
I pray to God we were joined in progress.
I mean, it wasn't nearly as bad as the minus 100 star special we just watched, but it just, there just wasn't much here. I mean, outside of Blackwell jumping off the top rope, I can't remember much of this match either. The finish was awful, so yeah. I didn't like the way it was filmed. It looked like it was filmed in front of six people. I mean, there may have very well been six people in the crowd.
Central States was a hot territory in 84.
But, so I'll give it the gentleman's star because it wasn't actively bad. It was just kind of there, like Callum said.
Wow, so. See, I went a dud on this match, but wow, okay. All right, Dr. G, what'd you think?
Well, I agree with everything that those guys said with this. The one thing I will point out is, and I've seen other matches with him before in the AWA, is how Blackwell could move for his size. Mm-hmm. You know, like but it just seemed like he had no chemistry at all with Buzz Tyler. Buzz Tyler actually brings nothing to the table for me. So it seemed like that Blackwell was having a rough time trying to get something out of Tyler, to be honest. It wasn't, as Callum would say, an abomination. So I went with a half a star on it. I couldn't rate it as low as the last match. I just thought that would be a travesty to do that. So,
you know, that's a good point. So I guess I'll go, a quarter star, because you're right, it's not as bad as the Valiant
match. I'll give him a half star. Why not? Jerry Blackwell jumping off the top rope. Eh? You know?
He didn't really jump. He fell. he fell off the top rope.
At least it was something. At least it's something I can remember from the match.
All right. Okay. Because he fell and I laughed my ass off. It was just awful.
Well, isn't laughing your ass off worth like half a star?
Okay, I'll go half a star on it. Because Jerry his fat ass fell off the rope. But that's okay.
Oh my God, it was brutal. The filming of it was brutal. The crap. It's just the whole thing was brutal.
Well, I think we could put Buzz Tyler to bed now. We were very lucky not to see him. But we could put him to bed.
Look, in a world where Jimmy Valiant versus Chief J Strongbow exists, I mean, this match is worth at least half a star.
Definitely.
Like 4 stars, if you put it in that context. All right. Well, okay, so we're going to go to our next match. So this is a match I added at the last minute after Konodal passed away. And it's interesting. So we're going to Maple Leaf Wrestling. This is in Canada, and I believe this is a subsidiary of the NWA. But we got kind of an extra bonus on here, because not only do we get Don Kernodle on this, we also get Johnny Weaver, who we've heard on commentary several times. So it's kind of a double bang for your buck. And the match also is cut short, unfortunately. But it's Johnny Weaver and Mike Rotundo versus Don Kernodle and Leo Burke from 1983 Maple Leaf Wrestling. This is in Canada. Leo Burke is your North American heavyweight champion. It's not the same one as the Mid-South, and Kernodal is your Canadian TV champion. So they had a whole territory up in Canada that I guess was part of linked to Mid-South.
Yeah, the Maple Leaf, that territory was run by the Tunneys. And
so this is before WWF got in business.
Yeah, and the Tunneys used to work with Crockett. So Crockett would send some of their guys up there. Because if you look at Don Kernodle's belt, that's not the Canadian television championship. That's the NWA tag team belt, if you look at it.
Yeah, I did. Yep.
So especially how we see these things. So, they used to have a working arrangement. And then that something happened with the Tunneys, I remember. And then one of them decided to sell to Vince, I think in like 84 or 85. So, but that's the story behind that territory.
Okay, look, we don't only watch old matches. We also get educated by Dr. G's wrestling knowledge. So thank you for that, Dr. G. We haven't had a good, Dr. G Florida story in a while, so that was good. So thank you for that. All right, so we're going to go. So the referee, again, those older referees, it looks like a mob boss in the 50s with his slick back hair and his clothes. I love these older referees and how they look in their matches. It's always fun to see. Lots of headlock in this. It was a short match, definitely cut. It was mostly faces dominating with a few moments of Kernodal. Johnny Weaver, who I thought was 80, looked good on the hot tag. Like he looks just as old here. I mean, he looks very, very old. But every Johnny Weaver match I've seen, even before this, he always looks the same age, and he never seems to age. But I thought for his age, he looked really, really good on the hot tag. I mean, we know he'll be doing commentating in 2 short years from this, like maybe even a year from now. But I didn't think he looked that bad in terms of how he looked. The match breaks down. Kernodal goes for a roll-up out of the corner, but Weaver gets a really bad-looking reversal for 3. And Weaver and Rotundo, I thought they made a pretty good babyface tag team. I thought it was basic tag. It was short. But I bet it was kind of like our first match we watched. If it had been longer, I thought it would have been pretty good. But I gave it 1.5 stars for what we had. So, Matt, I'll go to you.
My goodness, Canadian mobsters, Sean. I wonder if he was involved in the black market cigarette trade. But anyway.
He might have been one of the ones that took the hit on Bravo.
I thought Rotundo looked incredibly young here. Like he looked like he was like 17 or something. Another match that I thought, we kind of got gypped from because I thought this was really good for what we saw. It had really weird editing to it. Like, I think we only got 5 minutes. I would assume this match was probably a bit at the very least a bit longer than that. And it was a weird edit, too. It's like in the middle of a move, all of a sudden it flashes forward to like the end of the match. So, but this was, I think, different than anything we've watched so far. There was a fast pace to this that we really didn't see. Certainly didn't see it out of Valiant and Strongbow. But, I thought this was pretty good stuff for what we saw. and one of the matches that I wish we would have seen the full thing. So I went 2 stars on this. Would have been curious to see what the full match was like.
Yep, I agree. Dr. G, what do you think?
I agree with Matt. I went 2 stars on it. I wish we could have seen some more. It was definitely neat to see, Mike Rotundo at that time. I think at that time he was kind of going back and forth with, you know, Florida, Mid-Atlantic, and then this territory.
Yeah, we have a match on the next episode from 84 where he's in Florida with Wyndham. So, yeah.
Weaver, you're right. I mean, he's like Arn Anderson. He just looks the same.
Yep.
No matter what age he is. Honestly, I thought he did a pretty decent job. When I first saw it, I was like, oh, geez, Johnny Weaver, what the heck are we going to get here? But it wasn't that bad. And, you know, Cornardo and Burke, just good, solid workers. I mean, nothing, out of the ordinary there. But I did like the pace, especially compared to, you know, of course, we talk about the Valiant Strombo and then the Buzz Tyler, Jerry Blackwell match. So I thought at least it was a good pace to it. I would have loved to have seen the whole match, but maybe they cut it at the right point. Maybe there was some just, you know, rest holds and maybe it wasn't that interesting. So maybe we got the best part of the match. Who knows? But 2 stars for me.
Yeah. One thing I will add, I did find a singles match for the Canadian TV title between Johnny Weaver and Kernodal. After it, I already given you guys this match to watch, which was pretty darn good. So if you want to see a full-length Don Cornodal match, there is one against Weaver, which, again, Johnny Weaver and Cornodal, I mean, it's just like watching a Crockett match in Canada, and it was actually pretty good if you want to go watch that one too. So, Callum, what do you think?
I'm along the same lines as everyone else. I thought it was a fun, quick sprint. Another one that's unfortunate that it was clipped, and you would like to see the rest of it. Won't be the last time we're saying that. But it's good just to see, even in clipped form, it's good to see some of these matches because they are entertaining watches. Last two matches aside, I did notice that they called the commentator, whoever it was that was doing it, I can't remember. Said that Johnny Weaver was the man of 1,001 holds, which means he knows one more than Dean Malenko, but 3 less than Chris Jericho.
Mm-hmm.
And they were running down the cards for their upcoming circuit. Jimmy Valiant was the main attraction on the 31st of October.
God damn it, why can't I find that Jimmy Valiant Maple Leaf Wrestling match?
what a pity that you couldn't find that, Sean. Such a shame.
We can't escape him. I was like, this is quite the nice palate cleanser after the... After
you can't even leave the country and get away from him. That's how bad it is.
I know. I was enjoying this one. Nice palate cleanser after the abomination that we had before. And he goes, yeah. Jimmy Valiant gets a mention in this one as well, but no, I went 2 stars on this one. I thought it was a really fun watch.
All right, excellent. So we have gotten through our first 4 matches. We have 4 matches left. So we're gonna take our break. When we come back, we'll have matches with Buzz Sawyer, Dusty Rhodes, Ric Flair, Billy Jack Haynes, and Dick Slater. So we will be right back on the other side.
Black magic rain!
Place to Be Nation, welcome back to the second half of NWA Crock and Roll, episode number 17, part 3 in our Before They Were Crockett watch. We've watched our first four matches in the first half, and we are getting ready to jump into our second four. So we're going to jump right into, we're going to jump right into our next match, which happens to be Buzz Sawyer versus Tito Santana. So our second Tito Santana match, and this is from Georgia Championship Wrestling. It's from 1982 or 1983. So Buzz sells like a champ for Santana. Tito always looks fantastic. He has a toe hold on Buzz, which, you know, submission holds in these matches sometimes are a little rocky, a little rough. But I thought Tito, I just liked the way it looked and the way he, like, grinded it in. I just thought it was a really good-looking submission spot. Nick Patrick is your referee here in 1982 or 83. Looked like he was dressed to go on a safari. So, again, more interesting referee apparel. And then I was stunned. Buzz won with his foot on the ropes just from Tito missing a body press. And I thought the finish was really lame. I was a little disappointed in the match. I didn't think it was bad. I thought it was just okay. But I gave it the gentlemen's two. But I feel like with Tito and Buzz, and I know Dr. G is not a big Buzz fan, but I like Buzz Sawyer. I think he has some good matches out there. We know Tito Santana can bring it. I wanted more, but I went 2 stars. Colin, what did you think of this match?
I'm the same as you. Sean, my last note is that it wasn't bad, but it wasn't great. And we've seen both men, since we started this show, have better matches. As you see, Tito will give you a good match any time he goes out. You'll be hard pressed to find a match that he's in that doesn't, you know, break good. At the very worst, I do like it that we've seen Tito more times on these shows than some of the Crockett guys, like Buzz Tyler, and he doesn't even work for Crockett. But I was quite hopeful for this one because I've liked Buzz Sawyer as well since we started doing the podcast. But I wouldn't say I was disappointed, but I did expect a wee bit more from them. So I've gone slightly less than the gentleman's two. I've given it one. I went for 1.5.
Okay. Yeah, and I get that too because of high expectations. I struggle giving Tito less than 2 stars, but I totally get your point. This match should have been a lot better than it was, and I agree with you 100% because I have really, really high hopes for this. Dr. G, what did you think?
You know, Sean, I was struggling with it myself because Tito is a really good hand. He really is. And you see this on paper. I know I've been critical of Buzz Sawyer, but you see that match on paper. You're like, this is going to be a good match. Mm-hmm. And I believe this was a house show. It wasn't how they were promoting it. Or I thought I saw something. You know,
Listen, at the end of the day, I think it was a house show, but I was stunned that Tito Santana lost. I don't know why.
Yeah,
I think so much.
Yeah, I thought Tito was going to win this one. You know, obviously that, you know, it was kind of lame finish, but that means they did that finish to keep that storyline going. You know, so this way next month or next week or whenever, you know, however they ran the territory, you know, you come back and watch the rematch. That's basically probably what they were booking at that time. Yeah, I was kind of disappointed with the kind of lame finish. Callum, I expected a little bit more from the match. But I did. I did give it 2 stars just because I really enjoy watching some Tito matches. So I kind of wish now he was in Crockett during our time because he was in prime WWF period at you know, in his career at that time. So he, you know, he really, I'm getting much more of appreciation for him because, you know, most of the stuff I've seen was probably WWF stuff. I mean, I do remember him a little bit, you know, in the Georgia territory, but mainly I remember him for his intercontinental run in the WWF in the 80s.
Yeah, Tito was at WrestleMania 85 and having bangers with Greg Valentine when we started our podcast watch on this show. So he's a good hands at the WWF for sure.
No doubt.
But yeah, I could imagine him and Crockett would have been something else. So Matt, what did you think?
Yeah, pretty much on the same page as everybody else. I went 2 stars on it too. Had high expectations for this when you sent the list over and I saw this match, but didn't quite hit them. Match was a lot of legwork, but it was like well worked legwork. Like it wasn't a rest hold. He was actually working the hold, and just Tito's just so good at being a babyface. He's like just such a pure babyface, and he's so good at it. But yeah, not the best outing for him. And Buzz pinning Tito even with his foot on the ropes was really surprising. So it was still a pretty fun sprint for what it was, but I was expecting more, definitely, like you guys. So 2 stars.
All right, so we're kind of on this trend now. I mean, we had the really bad matches, but for the most part, we're kind of on a 2-star kind of trend. So I'm really curious on what you guys think about the next match, because this is kind of a big deal match. If you go back into the day and you put history in, to my favorite word, Sousa, context, right? So we have Nick Bockwinkel versus Dusty Rhodes for the AWA World Heavyweight title. This is from May 20th, 1983. The world title is on the line, and this is Houston Wrestling. And one of the things that I've grown to really love during this podcast, which will play out over the course of the summer for us, is Houston Wrestling has such a freaking library on YouTube that is just, it's like some of the matches on there you find and go, really, this match really happened? And this is kind of one of those for me. But yeah, I've really grown to love Houston Wrestling. So this is from Houston Wrestling. And again, it offers a lot of gem matchups. Bockwinkel's has a dick promo, which is actually arrogant and fantastic. I loved it. DiBiase comes out to challenge the winner, which I thought was a nice touch. I thought the match was a lot of fun. Dusty was being Dusty, showboating, doing his elbows. Bockwinkel, Bockwinkel looks like a legit pro. And I liked him that he had enough of Dusty shit, and then he started wrestling Dusty. Bockwinkel reminds me a lot of Flair and some of his mannerisms and his heeldom. Ref goes out, and then DiBiase comes in and just bloodies Dusty with his cast. And Nick gets the 3 count on Dusty, and I was legit surprised to see Dusty take a 3 count, especially in the 80s, because we're only 2 years out from our watch, and he takes a pinfall loss at the hand of Bockwinkel. I really enjoyed this. I actually wanted to see more of Bockwinkel wrestling because he is really, really good. And I've never really gotten into Bockwinkel too much, but I've seen some matches with him lately, and this is one of them where I've really enjoyed it. Dusty was a bloody heap and cut a hell of a promo after with JYD on DiBiase. Guys, I really liked it. I'm curious what you thought. I actually went 3 stars on this. So, Matt, I'm going to go to you first. What did you think?
Yeah, this was the Dusty Rhodes show for her, show for sure. I mean, the crowd was just molten hot for everything he did. I mean, losing it for something as simple as a punch. Mm-hmm. I mean, he just had them eating out of the palm of his hand. I don't know if you guys noticed, but at one point, every time the announcer said the time count, like, you know, 5 minutes remaining, 10 minutes remaining, it sounded like a loudspeaker announcement at a Home Depot. Like,
yes,
it was like 10 minutes have elapsed in the match. There's a sale on roofing nails in aisle 24.
It's so like, old school in these old style matches. You hear that almost every match.
They did
it's
that fantastic. In NWA.
Yeah.
I love
it. I know. It was more the sound of it that caught me off guard. Like, I don't know what type of speaker system they had in that booth.
Bruce Pritchard doing the announcement.
Sam Houston had it going through a bullhorn.
Good Lord. sounded like...
I'm sorry, Paul like Bosch, not Sam Houston. Paul Bosch.
Like in the prison yard or something. Like, Jesus. But, yeah, Bockwinkel, I thought, did an awesome job selling Dusty's punches. And, yeah, I really enjoyed this. The finish wasn't the best, but, you know, Dusty eating a pin, like you said, Sean, was shocking, especially at this point. And Dusty had been NWA champion once by this point, right, in 81?
Yep.
Once or twice. Yep. Yeah, so, I mean, at this point, he just flat out didn't get pinned. So that was pretty shocking to me. The promo after the match with Dusty's with the blood all over Dusty's face was great. So, yeah, really, really great stuff. Molten hot crowd. I went 3.25 on this.
All right. Excellent. Colin, what'd you think?
I really enjoyed it. I was looking forward to it when you said at the tail end of the last episode that this was one of the ones that we had on tap for watching for this one. The match didn't slow down at all, and there was no wasted movement from either guy for the length of the match. It seemed to go at a fair clip. I don't know if this one was clipped down at all. I don't remember.
No, I think
any.
This one was straight up. I don't think.
Yeah, it didn't look like it was. If it was, it was very minimal.
Yeah, Like I there was no noticeable places where they did it. I've got a notice where the Dusty is the master at playing the crowd. It was just this. He knew exactly when to make his comeback to get them at like a fever pitch, and then as soon as he does starts to come back, then they explode. I really enjoyed it. I gave this one 3 stars. I thought it was really, really good.
I agree. We're on a good trend here. 3 stars, 2 3-stars, and 3 1/4. Dr. G, what did you think?
I'm going to go 3 1/4 stars on this.
Wow.
I really enjoyed it. This is the Dusty Rhodes that I knew growing up. He was my first favorite wrestler. So these are the type of matches. And let me tell you, he had the crowd eating. You know, it was just like he had them in the palm of his hands. And I remember even just seeing him live, and he was my first match live. People just went insane for him. And Bockwinkel, great heel. Great heel. He's AWA's Ric Flair, but calmer. You know, he's got like that arrogant, you know, like get you with his zingers or what he says in his promos. He's not going to sit there and yell and scream and tear his jacket off or anything like that. But, you know, Bockwinkel, I think if he was in the NWA or even WWF and was on that stage, might have been even a bigger name than he was. And he's another guy that's kind of like, you know, like we say, like Arn Anderson is, you know, that just seemed like he's the same age, you know.
Yeah, he never ages, ever.
He looks the same, you know. But he really, really, I was shocked that Dusty actually took the pin myself, to be honest. But it was great. It was a good match. And that's what's great about that Houston territory, because they weren't really affiliated. They didn't have their own championships. Paul Bosch was known as being a good payer. So he would bring these guys in, you know, whatever deals he worked out with all the different territories. And, you know, you can have great matches like this. And you're right, Sean, when you look up online, you'll find a lot of Houston stuff with matchups that you would never thought you would see in the other territories. And you get to see it there. So it's good stuff. But 3 1/4 stars, no doubt. I enjoyed this one a lot.
I've really been enjoying the things we've been finding in Houston. And again, we'll talk more about that as we go over the summer. But I like what you said about Houston, too. It's like they didn't really have their own champion, so it was always touring. You had Andre the Giant show up. You had the NWA World Champion show up. The AWA World Champion show up. Mid-South was there a lot. It was just like, it was almost like the central spot for all the champions and all the wrestlers to go. And I think that's one of the reasons why I love it so much. And I would say underrated territory. It's not, because wrestling aficionados love Houston, but I'm just discovering it as we do this show, which is another great thing for this pod, is it's not just finding Crockett wrestlers that we watched in 85. It's finding a whole nother territory that I've really started to like a lot. Mid-South was one that we've done, and now I'm starting to like Houston just as much. So really, really good stuff. And by far, I'm trying to think, probably the best Dusty match we watched, including the Starrcade 85 main event. Wouldn't you say, Dr. G?
Definitely.
Yeah.
No doubt about it.
Okay. So we're going to go to our next match. So go out of your way to watch this match. Nick Bockwinkel and Dusty Rhodes, two of the greatest ever. So really, really cool find there. Our next match was also a cool little find. We are going to Portland with Billy Jack Haynes. So we get Billy Jack Haynes and Roddy Piper versus Ric Flair and Rip Oliver. This is from 1982, I believe. It's a 2 out of 3 falls match. I do believe this match is clipped. There is a longer version of it I did find later. But if it's clipped, it's really only like 2 or 3 minutes that are actually clipped out of this match. So hot open with Flair selling for the faces. Billy Jack looks like a porn actor with his stash. He has a terrible mustache in this. Flair and Oliver, they look like they should be a team. Rip Oliver was a big heel in the Portland territory. Him and Billy Jack had a really big feud in Portland. I like the heel work on Billy Jack. Billy Jack stiffed Oliver. Piper was great in the hot tag with Billy Jack nailing Flair with a clothesline. And Billy Jack gets a shocking win over Flair, making Flair submit and fall number one. Flair and Piper square off is always great. We get into the second full fall. The full Nelson was great. And Piper and Billy Jack win 2 falls straight. And then the end was a little confusing for me, and I thought short, and I think this is where it was clipped. But it was quick pace. Nice work. Both teams and a hot crowd. I wanted more. I actually went 2.75 stars, but if I had seen the full match, it would have been a lot more. Hot crowd, hot baby faces, hot heels. Just, I love this match. Colin, what did you think?
I am in complete agreement with you, Sean. I thought this was excellent. This is out of all the ones that, and we've said it for most of the stuff that's been clipped, or all the stuff that's been clipped, that we wish it was longer. We saw the whole match, because I thought this was everything about this was excellent. As you say, the crowd, the action that was happening, and it was non-stop. I said there was like lots of star power in the ring for what looked to be a TV tag match, which I can't imagine. I don't believe there's a lot of Portland footage still kicking about. And
yeah, it took me a while to find some Billy Jack stuff. I mean, it was hard.
We're lucky this survived as well. Looking at the quality of the tape on this one. Mm-hmm. But I can't imagine matches like this happened every week in Portland in the mid 80s. Flair as the hot tag babyface was certainly something. It's not something I'm used to. But he was excellent at it. And I missed that it was 2 out of 3 falls, so I was quite shocked when Haynes got the full Nelson tap out from Flair as quickly as he did.
Again, another shocking thing. So we've had 3 like shocking like wins tonight. I think that would be included.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
So I also heard they were hyping. Well, I thought they were hyping Hennig versus Rhodes. I'm thinking if that's Kurt Hennig and Dusty Rhodes, that's one that is a must find if you could. But it could also be Larry. I'm not quite.
I think it's Larry. I think it's Larry the Axe.
Given the time frames involved. Also wish to point out that Roddy Piper was wearing a magnificent kilt at the very start.
Yes.
I just wanted to have to put that on there. But it was chaos, and I loved it. I loved the match. I gave it 3 stars again.
Excellent. Dr. G, what did you think?
I love this. First of all, big Roddy Piper fan. And Billy Jack Haynes was my second favorite wrestler when I was growing up during the mid-80s when he came to Florida, probably because I got to meet him and got to carry the championship.
He's another one that's grown on me over the course of this podcast as well.
You know, it's a shame that, I mean, I obviously, as we can see now, he must have had a lot of issues. Now, again, I met him a bunch of times, and he was always great to the fans. Signs for everyone would stay. I mean, it was so shocking to see the type of person he was, you know, in his, you know, real life, because he was always accommodating as a, you know, to the fans. So I just never expected any of this. And he was so over in Florida. And then, you know, then he left, went to Crockett and then to WWF. He probably wasn't the best interviewer in the world, but he could go in the ring, and he started at 28 years old. This is his rookie year, this match. Mm-hmm. So, you know, this is good stuff. I mean, I this is a gem that you found here. And Rip Oliver was, you know, the Hulk Hogan of the Pacific Northwest, you know, like he was the guy that, you know, he was a heel, he was a face, you know, like he was their key guy. Always, he was always in a few. He's kind of like the Lawler, I guess, if you really wanted to compare it to a territory type of thing. In the Pacific Northwest, but this was good stuff. I like, you know, the quickness of it. Obviously, on a TV match, you see 2 out of 3 falls. You think you're going to have, you know, it was going to be a little longer. So I think, like you, Sean, I would probably like to have seen more. But obviously, with on television, they were trying to make it shorter. But I really enjoyed it. I went 3 stars on it. Wasn't as good as the Dusty Bockwinkel match. You know, I gave that 3.25, but I really enjoyed this match, and I'm glad you put this on here. Thank you for putting that on here.
No, I'm glad I found it. Matt, what do you think?
I'm at 3 stars for this, too. This was really, really great stuff. The crowd was just in a complete frenzy for the entire thing. Billy Jack beating Flair and making him give up, I thought was really surprising. I think you mentioned the footage. The footage was quite rough. Mm-hmm. Probably the roughest footage we've watched through this whole thing. It looked like it was on like a bad VHS tape. It was kind of tough at points to tell who was who and what was going on. But yeah, just real chaotic wrestling, different from really anything I think you were probably seeing at the time, and certainly different than anything we saw during this watch. So yeah, 3 stars, really fun stuff.
All right, so we kind of made up a little bit for the early duds and the Valiant match. We've had 2 over 3-star matches. So we are going to close the show out tonight. We are actually back in Houston one more time. We are going to November 9th. November 19th, 1982. It is Dick Slater versus Ted DiBiase. And Dick Slater, you know, like we said around on this pod, we've grown to really enjoy some of the folks' work on this show. Of people that we're not real familiar with, and we only have Crockett context. Dick Slater is another one for me that I've really enjoyed watching, and DiBiase as well. I mean, we've seen some really good DiBiase, so I was looking forward to this one. So we are in Houston again. Dick Slater has taken Junkyard Dog's place because he's out. I think he's on an injury or for some reason. DiBiase's your North American champion. Build height-wise, I thought this looked like a good matchup. There was some good back and forth and reversals, some slow spots a little bit. Like I said, I've really grown to like Slater's brawling style and funk-like nature. We talk like he reminds us a lot of funk in some of his matches, and he could actually wrestle. And then DiBiase uses the same glove he did on Dusty for Bockwinkel to get the pin to pin Slater. I think DiBiase is a tremendous heel. He cuts a promo after. And again, like I talked about with Houston wrestling, there needs to be a Houston network of some kind, like the WWE network, because there is some good shit in Houston. Fun match. I actually went 2 3/4 on this one as well. Matt, what did you think?
Yeah, I'm not high as on it as you. I went 2 1/4 on it. I don't know if you mentioned this was supposed to be DiBiase versus JYD that they mentioned.
Yep,
and JYD had a death in the family. Oh, I missed that. Sorry.
I missed that. It was a death in the family.
Yeah, they said it was. I think they said it was a death in the family or something like that. But yeah, hot start to this. I thought DiBiase looked a little bit beefy here compared to his WWF run.
The word of the day is beefy. An abomination.
An abomination. hot start, but I thought it got a little too headlock heavy for me.
Yeah, and there was a slow spot in the middle there.
It did eventually pick up a little bit, but I just think it got way, way, way too headlocky for me. And I get that every match isn't going to have a brisk pace to it, but I feel like they could have done more. The announcer did not know how to say the last name DiBiase. He kept saying DiBiase. And it was driving me fucking crazy.
Yes.
Oh, my God.
Bill Watts does that, too. Like, if you watch Old Mid-South, he calls him DiBiase.
Does J.J. Dillon.
Yes.
But then some say DiBiase. He said DiBiase and DiBiase in the match.
DiBiase.
Was setting off my OCD flares. Was driving me nuts. But anyway, the crowd, again, molten hot. Like, that's the thing with 80s crowds is they were molten hot for just about everything. And we've seen it these last 3 matches. And really throughout a lot of the night, they were minus the Valiant Strongbow match, of course. But they were relatively hot for everything. And I didn't really care for the finish either. I thought it was kind of a wet fart of a finish, to be perfectly honest. I get the glove was loaded and everything, but a punch, I don't know. I felt like they could have done more there, but still perfectly decent for what it was. So 2 1/4.
All right, Dr. G, what did you think?
I went 2.5. It could have been a 3-star match, but I agree with Matt. And I know sometimes in the 80s and some of the territories you did have the rest holds, the headlocks, you know, all that. But I thought it was just a little too much. You could have taken that part out, and it probably would have been a 3-star match because I thought they had a, you know, in the fast parts, they really had good chemistry together. Ted DiBiase was a great heel. He really was, and that's why Vince, you know, brought him to WWF because, you know, when they say he could have been – he was on target to be a NWA world champion, he would have made a great NWA world heavyweight champion. He was that good of a heel. I agree with you. He was a little beefier than he was in his WWF run. you know, because it is funny. When he did come to the WWF, I was like, wow, he did have a different look compared to when he was in the, you know, in Mid-South. That's what he was, I guess, at this time. But you're right, Sean, in terms of Houston. I mean, there's some really, really good stuff that, you know, is probably out there somewhere that you could go watch. It's just amazing. And I picked up on it too, Matt. You're so funny. I'm the same way. Oh, my gosh. It's like DiBiase. It's like, which one? Stick with one of them at least. It was like listening, you know, because he's from Brooklyn, so it was like listening to my uncle talk. You know, he can't my one uncle, he can never get like baseball players' names right. It would drive me crazy. You know, so that's what Paul Bosch reminded me of. It was he doesn't say title; it's title. That's how you kept saying.
we could go on and on about Bosch commentary, by the way. But
other than that, honestly, the match, I'll give it 2.5 stars. It was good. I was glad you put it on there. Dick Slater, you're right. Again, another guy that I'm gaining more respect for as I'm watching some of these matches.
Yeah, the gorilla gimmick doesn't do him justice, does it?
No. I was trying to forget about that.
Well, I'm going to call him Ted DiBiase from now on. It's not DiBiase, it's DiBiase. So, Colin, what did you think? Wrap us up on this episode.
I actually went the full 3 stars on this.
All right.
I thought it was really good. I actually don't have many notes. Well, I don't have any notes. I've just, my only note is very good 3 stars because I was watching it and I was just taken in by it. I thought it was really good and I completely agree with you when you're saying that the Houston stuff has been really good. I believe the owner of the Houston Videotape Library is one William Patrick Corgan, because I think it was on the NWA, I think it was an NWA on demand streaming service, and when Billy Corgan took over the NWA, they closed it down. So I think Billy Corgan owns all the Houston footage.
I actually thought Bosch's wife did it, because I think Bruce Pritchard did a pod on it, and I'm trying to remember, somebody owns it. It's either Bosch's wife, and I think Bruce Pritchard probably put it. I need to look it up, but somebody owns the footage. But it's either
you're
Bosch
right, or... and I can't remember myself, Sean, but I know Pritchard did do a great podcast on Houston wrestling. And you know, when you just thought that it was him just like talking about,
yeah, I thought it was just him being freaking,
but
you know,
but he's
Pritchard.
Right, yeah, it was good right. Stuff. I mean, he's totally right. It was really a good promotion.
It really was. I mean, I've watched to go off on a Houston tangent. Before I went on the Saturday special to do the Harley show, I watched a 2 out of 3 falls. Harley defended the world championship against Andre, like peak Andre.
Yes, it was
superb, and it was the one that the it was the one that he Harley slammed Andre outside. I was like, it was excellent. So yeah, more Houston wouldn't go amiss. Certainly. But yeah, I thoroughly enjoyed this one. I don't have many notes because I was just I just sat back and watched it. So yeah, 3 stars for me.
Yeah, and the good news is, guys, we'll have lots of Houston this summer so we can all enjoy the Houston stuff. So, again, more to come on that in future episodes, but we'll have definitely a lot of Houston for you guys this summer as we try to get to December 85 by September, which we will. So, guys, that wraps up tonight's watch. So it looks like the first half we were a little but it looks like we had a strong back half with Dusty, Billy Jack, and Slater. So 3-star matches there. So good, strong ending, and probably our best run of 3-star matches out of any of the pods. So really good stuff there. And of course, we had our worst match that I think most of us have ever seen in the Valiant match. So good little mix tonight. So as I did on the Lasalle episode, I will give you a sneak peek of what's to come in part 4, our final watch of Before Crockett. We've watched 22 matches up to this point. We have 7 more on the next episode. So Colin, we are going to reach a monumental milestone here. So I've gone all 3 of these pods and parts without a Wahoo match. We are going to watch what many might consider the quintessential Wahoo match with somebody that might potentially have worn a shirt that said, "I broke Wahoo's leg." So what do you think about that?
Is it the match where he broke his leg?
It might be. It Hopefully. Possibly could be.
Well, that'll be a fun watch for me.
Yeah, I was just saying, if I can't get a good rating out of that match, then there's no hope whatsoever. So as I put the first two matches tonight for Souza, I put that match on just for you from the bottom of my heart.
You're too kind.
I did. I felt that I owed you to find something that you would really enjoy. We're also going to see the Funks. So we talked about Dory Funk Sr. We're going to see the Funks in a tag team match from Japan with Abdullah in it, which Matt and I went back and forth on this. Pretty damn good match, which we'll talk about there. We'll see Ron Bass, Black Bart. We'll see the Midnight Express. And I have found, holy shit, guys, I have found a match with J.J. Dillon that has to be seen to be believed in a tag team match against a team I've never heard of. And he's tag teaming with Arnold Skolin. So we have...
my goodness.
Good Lord.
So we have...
calling in sick.
No, you're not. You're not. Listen, I find some hidden gems on this show. You never know. That match can be very, very good. You never know.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure.
So, so more great stuff to come on in the next episode. Matt, thank you so much for joining us tonight. It's been a pleasure as always, and you'll be back for part four. Before we go, anything that you would like to plug, Matt?
Can find me, like Sean mentioned earlier, on Highway to the Impact Zone, usually on every other episode of that, getting ready to talk about Against All Odds 2005 within the next couple of weeks. Check that out. New episode of Piece of the Action is out. We had a group live watch celebrating the first anniversary of Piece of the Action. Sean was on that, along with Jennifer Smith, Logan Crosland, and Ben Locke. We watched Die Hard with a Vengeance and had a tremendous time watching that, if I do may say so myself. So check that out. You can find me on Twitter at MSouza1991.
Yes, that was a very fun episode. So everybody go listen to that Piece of the Action. Very, very, very funny episode. Colm, how about you?
We are in the middle stretch between Special Relations episodes. We're due to record another one of them probably in a couple of weeks' time. The last one was another fun episode. This one we'll probably talk. I'm just warning you. This is the last episode before the Euro 2020 Championship start. So there will probably be a good bit of football talk, considering it's the last time that we'll talk to each other before Scotland versus England. So we've got that. We've got that coming up. There's also, as you said, Sean, there is the Place to Be Nation YouTube channel. You can find all of the matches that we've watched on the last two episodes, and these ones will be included as well. And next episode also. They're on there. There's a nice handy playlist if you want to watch the matches after we've talked about them, or before we talk about them, before you hear us talk about them. There's also that for one of... the other live watch wrestling podcast we've got, which I think Sean may talk about, so I'll keep quiet on that one just now. And there's also the so if you could search Place to Be Nation, all one word, on YouTube, you'll find the channel on there, and subscribe to us on there. That would be lovely. And do the same on twitch.tv/placetobenation, where there is some live footage of me playing games badly sometimes, and also every month we have the live watches of every main roster WWE pay-per-view. And by the time you hear this, we'll also have done NWA Where Our Shadows Fall. It's our second venture to the NWA for that one as well. They're always a good time. There was actually a Best Bits podcast drop on the wrestling feed for the highlighting the best bits from WrestleMania Backlash, which was handily curated by Matt in the doing the Lord's work, putting the clips together on Twitch. So twitch.tv/placetobenation for that, and give us a follow on there as well, please.
Excellent. And again, as always, Colin, thank you for putting that playlist together. And also, you do a phenomenal job on those Twitch streams. And it'll be good. Current NWA is back, and it's good that you guys are doing that Twitch stream on the next pay-per-view. And I will let Dr. G talk about that and what he has coming up. So, Dr. G, what do you got?
Okay, so you can follow me on Dr. G PTB, at Dr. G PTB, I should say. Now, we are the Twitch feed. I'm You know, I had to tell Callum, unfortunately, my daughter's graduating high school on Friday, but, you know, because of COVID, it's outside. So if it rains, the rain date is on Sunday, exactly at the time of the pay-per-view. So
I guess the daughter graduation trumps Nicole.
Yeah, that's probably a little bit of a bigger deal.
But we're going to pray for no rain and be able to be on that. So so definitely take a listen to that, because that's we'll have a lot of fun. But we're so excited that the NWA, current NWA, is back, When Our Shadows Fall. Interesting to see if they do something with the set. Now I heard they're letting fans in for the pay-per-view and for some TV taping. So that should be exciting, because that's what makes it. I mean, I know they've been using some of the guys that are at the tapings to give some crowd noise, but it'll be nice to have some authentic crowd noise from fans. You can listen to me every Saturday. It drops at 9 a.m., the NWA Saturday special with the Podfather. Every week we talk about current NWA, and it's been getting hotter and hotter, and so we're really enjoying it. And of course, this show, this is good stuff here. Sean, you're doing a good job finding some gems. Yet, listen, you're going to find some that are not so good, but that's not a reflection on you. That's a reflection on the guys that are wrestling. And I don't think you're going to be able to find anything that's good for Jimmy Valiant. So there's nothing you can do about that, unfortunately.
No, I mean, I'd be lying if I didn't say I purposely might have found one bad match tonight on purpose. I mean, I'd be lying.
Oh, yeah. Weird.
Trying to be nice here now. Come on.
No. I'm trying to find matches that no one's probably either seen or heard of and never seen. And I'm enjoying doing these because I'm learning a lot as we go. Hopefully our audience is. And we're just trying, we're trying to fill our content and hopefully have some good shows while we wait for the network to bring back Crockett Watch. And we will get there no matter what. I think we have a fun summer plan. So we'll have part four of our series next week. I'm sorry, on the next episode in a couple weeks. And then we're going to start after part four this summer. We are going to have a two-part series on matches from Houston, because I think we've all enjoyed Houston. And we will have Ben, Collins' pal from Special Relations, join us for that two-parter. And then at the end of summer, we'll have a two-parter called Unwatched, where we'll go back and watch matches from our April through November 85 that we have not watched or that we missed. And I did find, guys, in that, towards the end of the summer, I found the full match of Dick Slater and Dusty Rhodes versus the Russians, where Slater was the Gorilla. So I found the full match, and we'll be watching that one towards the end of summer. So I can't wait for that one. So, but really good stuff coming up here on NWA Crock and Roll over the summer. So as for me on Twitter, I'm at NWA Crock and Roll. As Colin brought up, there's another playlist to another new pod that I'm doing with Logan, Scott Shiflett, and Jacob Williams. It's called PTBN Wrestling YouTube Roulette, where we watch four matches, live watch, and commentate. And Colin has done a great job of uploading those videos as well. Those you can actually live watch those with us if you want to listen to the pod at the same time. We will be recording a second episode. Episode number two will be recorded in a couple weeks. Susan brought up Highway to the Impact Zone. We already talked about it at the beginning of the pod. Susan and I do another pod on current Impact, where basically it's just Susan and I using our names with whatever the name of the pay-per-view is, because that's how original we are. on the pop feed, I'm on Battlestar in the 25th Century. You have Wrestling Chicken Salad, Popcorn Chicken Salad. I'm on way too many things, but you know what? We love doing these pods. We love talking about the content, and they're a lot of fun to do. And we thank you all for listening. So please go back and listen to all the Quadapods. They're all great, great talent, great people. And we thank you guys for listening. So with that, I am Sean Kidd for Dr. G, Matt Souza, and the Abomination, Scottish Abomination column, McDougal. We will see you on our next episode for part four of Before They Were Crying.